underway, hearing of submissions on the proposed Southland water and land plan. And at this stage of the proceedings, we're still hearing from submitters. But before I turn to the submitters, anything from the reporting officers?
Nothing to that, sir.
We have something for you, just to give you a heads up, and I'll do a formal minute on this in due course, but as you're aware, last week central government released two documents, the National Environmental Standards on Plantation Forestry and the National Policy Statement Freshwater Management 2017. We have to give effect to both of those documents. So what we would like is a report from the officers, and you may need to consult with others within the council on this, just on the implications of those two documents for the process that we're now in, and particularly the need, if any, to align the provisions in the plan with provisions in those two documents. For example, I know the NES on plantation forestry is directed at plantation forestry, but it has a whole lot of definitions in it of things that we use, words that we use in this plan, and definitions that we have may be different than the ones in the NES, and it would seem to me that there'd be sense to align those definitions. Just, and there might be a whole lot of other issues like that that we need to think about.
Yes, I have looked at those documents, in particular the plantation forestry one, and that's causing a few headaches at this point.
Yes.
What's your timing on wanting that information?
Well, ideally we'd like it before we finish the hearing of submissions, so before the end of September. The second best option would for it to be part of the reply, but it'd be nice to have some kind of advice on it before then so that we can be thinking about it during the adjournment while the reply report's being finalised.
Certainly. Inevitably it will need to be part of the reply.
As well.
So getting some prior information is no problem at all.
Yeah, maybe some initial advice at a high level and then the detail of it coming through in reply.
Certainly.
Yeah. But I'll do a little brief minute on that, but if that sort of approach would suit the reporting officers, then that would be fine, I think.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. I thought I might have been causing you some headache. Right, I'll just check. The first submitter on my list is Case Rauber. No. Second submitter on my list. And just forgive me if I pronounce your names wrong. I've got a difficult name as well, so I'm used to it. Is it Radenclaw?
Yep.
Yep, come on up. This table here is for our submitters.
I didn't know I was going to be first.
There you go.
Promotion.
Along here, right?
Yeah, anywhere along there. So good morning and welcome. We've read the original submission that you lodged. Thank you very much for lodging that. You don't need to reread that out to us. But I see you've tabled some extra material today.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, are you happy just to take us through that? And then we'll see if we have any questions of you at the end of that.
Yep. Thank you. Just for a start, I'd like to say I'm not that comfortable being here. I found the whole process of making a submission on this proposed plan quite onerous. For me, it was a mammoth job trying to read the proposed plan and sifting out the parts that would really affect their business. And then waiting for a year and then coming in here. So please excuse us if our submission is not as professional as others you might have heard, but it is our first time and we'll do our best. I do acknowledge that the summary from Beef and Lamb and Piro Farmers was helpful though. I've got a few photos there. We farm at Fort Rose.
Yeah.
In southern Southland. Jeanette and I own it. We have the video there. We own a 352 hectare sheep farm, which is 255 as effective, if hectares. And it's an all sheep farm. We winter 2,500 ewes and 700 hoggets. We take pride in our farming, and because it is a sheep farm, and the way we farm it, we think we have a low environmental impact. We use very little nitrogen fertiliser and soil test every year to make sure we're applying the optimum amount of fertiliser. Coming up, you'll see we have about 67 hectares of native bush on our farm, which we haven't developed, and the sheep do not have access to that. Sorry, so we have a slide here, but we'll get there. There's bushes there, we haven't developed that. And the balance of the ineffective areas and shoutabouts and forestry plantations and gullies. We also have 8 duck ponds on the property.
Commissioner Allison, who has his own farm, just whispered in my ear, that's a beautiful looking farm.
Oh, right. Thank you, Mr. Allison. Anyway, if we go on to our submissions, Rule 22, if I just work through in the order, except the one, the environmental plan appendix N, I'll leave that to last if that's all right. You can interrupt me if you like on the way if you want to ask questions or if you think I'm barking up the wrong tree. Rule 22, we oppose that. We oppose it because the proposal is for dairying on the zone our farm is in is to become discretionary. Now, a sheep farm is surrounded by dairying, so in the future, if we or any of our family wanted to sell it, and if the buyer wanted to convert it to dairying, and even if he meets all the conditions, the council could still turn the buyer down from converting it. Our main gripe is on today's prices, that would mean a $1.3 million drop in the value of our farm. We think that's a huge loss in the investment we have worked all our working lives for. So we do not agree that the principle that the Environment Southland can just decide on the value of our farm by who buys it. So that's that one. And also it would limit our option to leasing to neighbours. Rule 25, we would like that amended. We think a 3 metre buffer zone on slopes up to 10 degrees and a 10 metre buffer zone on slopes 10 to 23 degrees would be sufficient to catch any sediment runoff. That's our opinion anyway. We think cultivation should be allowed up to 23 degrees. I was surprised how much difference each 1 degree made over 20 degrees though, just with our measurements. I just used my phone and a plank of wood on the various hills.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised. I thought 20 to 21 there would hardly make a difference, but there was quite a surprising difference. In summer, on hard clover ground, I don't think I'd be that comfortable topping over 22 degrees just on the tractor without jewels on. With jewels on, I'd be happy cultivating up to 23 degrees. But I think once you're over 24 degrees, I think there'd be too much soil movement for what we'd be comfortable with at home anyway. So that's sort of my opinions on that anyway. Now we're on to Rule 70, which we support. Now I see in, whether I can bring that up or not, I see in the Section 42A report that there are submitters wanting sheep included in this rule of sheep not having to be fenced out of waterways. I also note that the author of that report wants to hear from farmers and industry groups before making a recommendation. So I'd just like this noted in connection with that too, if that's okay.
Yep, it's more than okay.
Oh, yeah. We strongly support sheep being exempt from this rule. We maintain that for most of the year sheep seldom visit waterways, and the times they do, they never stand in the water, so there is no direct deposit from sheep into the waterways. I can elaborate on that a bit further on with some of those photos. At home, we've worked out that if we were to fence off all our waterways, I've roughly worked out it's about 10.5 k's. that would cost us about $170,000, which is, it's a big lot for our sort of smallish operation. Also, if we included an area for repairing planting on one side only, we would lose production from about 10.5 hectares, which equates to $12,600 a year. So this would have a huge impact on the financial viability of our business. And these are kind of pretty real figures, they're not just figures we've plucked out of the air. Now I'll go on to the farm management plan, Appendix N. So I've got quite a few issues with this. I'd rather have that scrapped altogether, really, if we could, but if we can't, there's a few points. I don't think we need annual updating. I think once developed, the plan should be right unless there's a change of land use. I think it is far too complicated and compulsive. There are five pages of requirements. For us, I think we'd have far better buy-in to it if it was a simple best practice document. Also, with the publicity about the proposed plan, it has raised awareness among farmers in general anyway. As it stands, with this proposed management plan, I can see the way of forcing sheep farms to fence off and do repairing plantings on critical source areas, whereas under the proposed plan, the sheep are exempt from that anyway. If we could move on to those photos, then that would be good. Thanks. A lot of the gullies on our farm are like this, and we kind of think that they're natural riparian areas within themselves. Just have another one. They kind of filter any runoff without any more interference. And like that one there, just hold that for a second, please. If, for instance, if we were forced into fencing this one, we'd naturally have to fence it right around the top there. Mm. Which would lose quite a bit of grazing on the side, then all that would grow up into sort of unwanted grass, natural native grass cotsfoots and stuff. And plus, our farm years ago was real bad for gorse, and all those gullies were just choked with gorse. So, of course, the gorse would start coming up worse, and we'd have to spend a lot more time spraying and expense and, you know, that's not that great either. But now, like it was, it's quite solid. The banks are solid and there's no erosion. That's good. We'll move on to the next one. Even the smaller gullies like this, the sheep, because of the cutty grass and stuff, and the sheep don't very often graze into them. And so even the smaller gullies sort of act as a natural filter. And here's just another view of another gully. And like that. Now, if we could just go back one, could we please? Right up in the top left-hand corner, we have fenced a gully off there, and I was in there the other day having a look, and it's quite a lot of dead matter and stuff under the grass that hasn't been grazed, and if there's any runoff runs through that, we kind of think it takes all that dead matter into the waterways and causes just as much sediment as if it's nicely grazed. Oh, you can just move on now, be good, thanks. Just another one showing a duck pond. And with the 9 duck ponds that we have got, if we do make a mistake or there is some sort of event that we can't manage, there's virtually a duck pond in every stream outlet on the farm anyway, so it would catch any sediment runoff. Well, that's what we think. Now, this here is where the creek's been modified, and with a crossing, and you can see how the sheep have allowed to graze right down to the water, and it's kept the grass healthy, growing with a strong root system. Now, if that floods, which it does occasionally, it just floods and then goes down and everything remains good. If that was old long grass fenced off and the flood came through it, it would tend to, because of, yeah, the because the grass is longer, catches the water more and tends to break it open, and you get sediment coming out of it, whereas there's no sediment comes off that. And we think because it's healthy grown grass, it's any runoff from during normal times, it catches that just as well as the long fenced off grass. And just the final quick video, just another gully going through three or four paddocks just to show fence down one side but not on the other side, just to show that it's it is quite healthy. And now stop, but never mind. So in conclusion, with this riparian plan, with the environmental plan, I guess I'm saying that if we had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on fencing, planting, and then perhaps a water scheme, and find that the water quality leaving our farmers not altered, it'd be a total waste of hard-earned money. I think there's really got to be a measurable outcome before any money is spent, so that we know it's going to help, that the water leaving our farm is going to be better off spending all those dollars than what it is now, like it is. So that's kind of our points.
Yeah,
just a wee bit there at the end there of the forestry, yeah.
All right, are you happy if we see if we have questions for
you?
Yep. Mr. Stewart, understand the points you've made. How do you think we should measure your property today to get an understanding of it? And then if we do make changes, we actually want to use that as a standard to make sure that what we're doing is actually improving the property, not taking the property backwards, which you've suggested could happen.
Yep.
Is there any tools or methodology that...
I'm not right up into that, but I would imagine if I could monitor our waterways, say, over a year at various outlets, and then we'd have a baseline then. But then the trouble is, to move on, I've got to spend money on doing something to see if it's going to improve or not. So I'm just not sure if I could select one area perhaps and maybe do, although we have, like, I'm not totally against fencing all the waterways off at all, but if I could maybe do a small area and see if it does improve the quality. Well, we think the quality is good anyway, but if it does improve, well then perhaps there's a case that we should be doing more towards it. It is kind of difficult, but that's my main crutch, is if we do all this money and then it's no better. But if it could somehow be proven that it was going to be better, well then, yes, it's something that we can do, yeah.
So I'll ask... question really is in Appendix N, there is room in there to make a number of comments and justify your reason for doing things or not doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that even though you've got comments there that you really don't want Appendix N, Appendix N could actually be a way of actually understanding what you've done to manage critical source areas and manage what is seen to be places on the farm which is giving you some grief, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of writing down what's in our heads and what we're doing, I suppose, so other people can look at it. That in itself doesn't improve the water quality, but it just makes a whole lot of work for us to do it. But if that's what the country wants, and there seems to be a big catch cry these days about repairing planting, like everyone's doing, even politicians are doing it now. And even the naming of an area as a critical source area, it gives it kind of more importance than what it deserves, I think. I know there are some areas that are important, but critical is a very important word, I don't think. But it conjures up a measure that if you don't do something about it, we're going to be in a disaster. So I think they could have thought of another word for that themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, how do you winter stock? Do you got a CGS or do you grow fodder or what?
Just on swedes, the sheep on swedes. Yep.
So do you exclude those gully areas when you're rake feeding in the winter?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do the buffer zone around the just temporary electric fence.
Yeah.
And we try to do the best management practice of feeding downhill and, and all the rest of the things that aren't really compulsory, but you take them on board and do them anyway. So. Yes, no, that's what we do,
And the last question, you say you soil test every year.
Yes, we
do. What sort of pea levels, Olsen pea levels, are you running at now?
We're around about 22.
Which is the goal?
Yeah, we don't want to get too high, if we can maintain around 22 to maybe up to 25 would be our...
So what maintenance for... Do you have to maintain?
Yeah, well, to balance our production, we're sort of round about the 300, 350 kgs per hectare. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. Have you done water tests in your creeks, or do you know what the water quality is like?
No, we haven't. I'm not sure how to go about doing a water test as yet. But just by our eyes and looking and seeing what's growing and all the natural vegetation, how healthy it is, we are assuming the water quality is good. And there are, you see copper bullies and we sort of fish around in it. We're just assuming, and it's clear, although all the streams are... a silty bottom, even in the native bush it is, like there's no rock bottom, so even in the native bush if there's a rain event, it will discolour the water, naturally. So as far as we know and we hope, the quality is good.
Are you at the top of the catchment? Are there farms above you?
We're pretty well, a lot of our creeks are from the top. There's one creek that comes... the other side of the native bush is a forestry block and then another smallish farm right at the very top of it. A lot of our other ones were the start of it. And all the creeks are quite small. Like that one with the bite on the dam, it was the biggest creek that we've got, bite on the crossing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You've got the duck ponds on your property. Do you notice that they fill up with sediment at all, or do they generally stay pretty...
Stay pretty good. there was one that did silt up, but it was on the creek where we came from another farm, and they did a lot of development up there before they planted in the trees under another ownership, and it did actually silt up. We did notice that. So it does, the salt does move. We do, it was quite surprising actually. Yeah. But then it was sold and then the next people planted in trees and you don't notice the salt there now. Right. So, but they did do a great big development. They did a lot of days and a lot of ditching, all at once.
It looks like some of your gullies are fenced off on one side, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So did the sheep get through and control of broom and gorse that might be coming away on the other side of it?
They can too, well, because each paddock, your normal's got a gully down each side of it. Mm. And so where the fence goes across to on the other dividing fence, we leave a crossing there, and they go across there. But sometimes, because it's kind of dangerous with sheep, going across narrow points, we have to fence that off. And then the grass does grow up there. We do have to keep at the gorse on that side, a bit more than we do on the grey side. But yes, that's what does happen. Yeah.
Do you find that sheep get stuck in the creeks and die at all? Or
no, not too bad really. The only reason they visit a creek like that is if in the summertime, if mobs are used when you're trying to eat your paddocks out, they don't go in, well, my opinion is they don't go in after water, they go in after the weeds that grow in the water. And that's when they, if they do that, they can become bogged in. But a lot of the creeks aren't that kind of creek, like they've got vegetation growing in them, so there's not an opportunity for them to do that. but there is the odd creek, like not all of it, there is the odd creek where we've got to be, but we tend to fence those off then in the end. Because, you know, sheep are valuable to them.
Sure.
There's two prongs. We don't want to them getting stuck and dying in the creek, cause, and it's a job to get them out. And they're valuable if we lose them too.
Lastly, have you considered contacting Environment Southland or Beef and Lamb about doing a farm environment plan?
Not yet, but we probably will have to, I guess. Yeah. Yep. Do you think we should be by looking at that? Or?
Oh no, not at all. But a lot of people have done that, and you know, it's Beef and Lamb are advocating for that through their through their systems.
Yeah.
No, it looks like a very nice farm, but you know, farm management planning is something that the council is promoting and that other industry organisations are doing as well.
Mm. Yeah, so it's just the compulsive and the auditing of it that,
okay.
You know, once you write something down, if you don't do it, well, what's going to happen? You know, farming's such a thing that changes, your income changes so much each year. One year you think that things are going all right, and the next year land can drop by 20 or 30 bucks, and you're on the bones of your bum. So you can't always do things that you write down that you promise that you're going to do. But we do try our best.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Thanks very much.
Just wanted to ask you about cultivation. I assume some of the steepest slopes you're cultivating to put into a fodder crop can you move? That you're right.
Yeah.
What's the sort of rotation you use for that?
We only cultivate paddock probably every 20 years.
Okay. So you cultivate it, put it into a fodder crop, and after that?
Back into grass. Occasionally we'll do two fodder crops.
Right, thanks very much for coming in and presenting your material and answering our questions.
Okay, thank you.